and welcome to this cassette on smart leadership. You're already part of the 5% of the top leaders just by the fact that you're listening to this cassette program. What is a smart leader? See, most leaders think that leadership is being out in front or being in charge, being in a high-profile, dynamic guru type of position that tells everybody where to go and what to do. Believe me, nothing could be further from the truth. Smart leaders of the 21st century need to be motivators, not dominators. They need to lead by commitment, not by control. They need to get consensus instead of commanding people as far as what to do. To accomplish this, we need to avail ourselves of cutting-edge research on how to hire the right people, build a high level of self-esteem in each individual, use individual motivators to motivate each person on our team, and to make sure we can isolate the bad apples that are dragging the motivation down of the team. We will also in this series be talking about making meetings more productive because as leaders we have to make our meetings productive. Statistically, Americans spend 55% of their time in meetings, where Peter Drucker says we should be spending less than 25%. So we need to make those meetings more productive, shorter, and to the point. We also need to be delegating more effectively, and we'll spend some time on the side of one of the tapes discussing delegation. And that's important because a leader cannot do it all his or herself. We need to be getting other people to do it, and the steps to do that effectively are critical to the success of a leader. We will also be talking about empowering staff and how to get more from others, managing others productively, because a good leader is also a sound manager. Whether you're a leader of a team now or want to become a top-flight smart leader, internalize the messages on these tapes and begin changing the way you see yourself as a manager and as a leader. One of the key essential steps to being a smart leader is to hire right in the first place. We find that 80% of the control you have over your people is who you hire in the first place. You say, well, Mike, I don't have that authority now. Well, the reason I'm sharing this on this tape is so that you start to get that authority. Go to your boss, go to the personnel department and say, look, I need to have this authority in order to make my group run effectively and productively. If you can get that authority now, you find that in the future, your job will be so much easier. I always quote other people. Here's a quote from me. It's really hard to motivate the dead. And if you don't have people that are excited in the first place, you're going to find you're not going to be able to motivate them. You're not going to be able to lead or inspire them. One story I heard about the Hyatt Corporation, when they open up a new hotel, they will interview 500 people if they only need 100. And what they find is if someone doesn't smile at least 5 times during the interview, they don't hire them. You see, they realize that you can't teach people to have love for customers if they're not happy. So they have to look at the elements necessary to make the job productive. The second thing you want to work on is building high level of self-esteem in each of the people on your team as a smart leader. Building high level of self-esteem in those individuals is so critical. It's the number one problem in the world as far as workers are concerned. You see, if people don't hold themselves in high regard, that's the definition of self-esteem I got from the McGrain Institute of Self-Esteem. If people don't hold themselves in high regard, how are they going to work effectively on the jobs? How are they going to be productive? If you really take pride in yourself and who you are and what you're doing, it's amazing how much more pride you'll take in your job. We need to build self-esteem in individuals. There's a lot of ways of doing that. First of all, you need to treat people like adults. Remarkably simple concept, but we do so many things that treat people like children. For example, we don't give them the budget they need in order to do their jobs. They have to keep coming back to us and asking permission. Can I please have some money to do this? If it's their project, they ought to have the budget. 3M Company does something that's pretty amazing with their engineers. It's their 15% rule. What they say is this: if you're an engineer here, you need to be using your creative talents in a creative way. We will allow you to use your time, at least 15% of your time, in doing something that isn't related to the project at hand, as long as it's somewhat related to work. And as a result, engineers feel empowered to try new things. That's where post-it notes came from. You see, when you give people opportunities to expand into areas that you may not have thought they were capable of, they feel free, they feel empowered, they feel like adults, and they just fill up with high levels of self-esteem. A third tool of smart leaders is to use individual motivators for each individual. What we're saying here is that no two people are alike. Face it, folks, if what motivates you motivated them, they'd have your job. They don't. They have different motivators. Some people could care less about money. Other people, money is the main thing. Some people could care less about giving to charity. Some people, that's the main thing. So let's take a look at some of the key motivators that you can use with each individual. Here's 10. These are not in any particular order, but just the 10 motivators that you may want to consider looking at right now. They are power, achievement, affiliation, affection, prestige, security, altruism, challenge, money, and the basic human needs. Let's take a look at them individually. Power. Do you have a need for power? If you're listening to this tape and you want to be a leader, yes, you got a need for power. Power's good. See, power says I have control over my life and I have control to help other people in their lives. Power is okay. Power can be a very good thing. Some people have a greater need for power than others. Those that have a high need for power, you need to satisfy it because that is going to be their motivator. In sales, we call it the hot button. Everybody has a hot button. Hasn't it happened to you where somebody came to sell you something, you said, no, 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 I don't want it, I am not interested, whatever, and then they said the one thing that stuck in your mind. It was the insurance rep who came to you and said, look, I want to sell you a policy, and no, 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 I don't need it, but all of a sudden it hit you that they said something about your son's education or your daughter's security in the future, and then you said, okay, I'll buy it, or at least I'll look at it. Okay, well, we need to find the hot buttons, and for someone who's got a need for power, that is their hot button. Put them in charge of a project. Make it their baby, their project. That gives them a feeling of power and control. You could give them the budget and say, look, here is a budget for you to work with. I want to see what you can do with this, what you can accomplish, how much you can produce, or how much you can expand your department. That gives them, again, a feeling of power, of control. Letting them act autonomously or on their own may be a key motivator for those that have a need for power. If they have to keep coming back to you and asking permission or can I do this or whatever, it makes them feel small and disempowered. We need to go and give them the power they need. Obviously, if you could promote them, that's the easy way, but you can't always promote people, so you have to find creative ways of satisfying the need for power. Achievement as a second motivator here is one of those things that it's a little harder to get a handle on, but those people that have a high need for achievement need to be able to feel like they have accomplished something special in their lives. Here's a suggestion. Sit down with them and set some goals, or let them set their own goals, and then you review those goals with them. Anytime somebody sets a big, grandiose, powerful goal and then achieves it, they feel fantastic. Helping recognize them in front of the group may also help to spur this feeling of achievement. But give them something they can strive for, something they can shoot for, and you find they will feel empowered. They will feel motivated. That's what a smart leader would do. One of the things I'll do in my seminars is put paper high up on the wall, and I'll give one of the students in the class a felt tip pen, and I'll ask them to jump as high as they possibly can and mark the paper on the wall, and they jump up and do that. And then I say, okay, can you see your mark? They say, yes. And I say, now, beat it. And every single time, they've been able to beat it. Now, the first instruction was jump as high as you can, but guess what? They did at that point, but once they had a goal or a target, they were also able to beat it. Well, the thought is here, if we give people goals, targets to work for, something they can see, something tangible, they will beat it. They will feel like they are achieving something, and then make sure you reward, praise, recognize that achievement. Third motivator we'll talk about today is affiliation, and that is the social needs. See, some people are real social animals. They just have to be around people. It's what gets them excited. It's not the job that they're excited about. It's not the assignment. It's being with the people, being with their buddies, being with their mates. That's what gets them excited. So use that productively in your favor. Instead of going and criticizing the social behavior, use it in some way as a motivator. For example, put that person in charge of maybe the birthdays of the people on the team. So they can order out the cake and they can plan the party, the get-togethers. Many times the social people just love to get involved in those types of things. Put them in charge of your newsletter or have them create their own newsletter. They love interviewing people, talking to people, finding out what's going on, and they can help improve the communication process The social people are the ones that just love to do that kind of thing. If you got a social person on your team, maybe you could put them in charge of customer service. See, that's the kind of person you want to have doing customer service. In working with utility companies around the world, one of the things I found out, most people in the customer service department aren't really customer-oriented people. What they tend to do is they find somebody who is injured on the line, has a bad back or an injured arm or something, they can't put them anyplace else, so they stick them in customer service. And that's why when you go in to pay your bill, a lot of times it's, yeah, what do you want? It's not their fault. It's not the personality type. Strive as much as possible to put customer service kinds of people in customer service roles. In other words, these social people, these people with a need for affiliation, give them things that put them in charge of people skills. Another thought, let them go and visit the sick people on the team at home. Instead of you going to do it, give them the assignment and say, look, would you be willing to go and bring a birthday card down, maybe some flowers or candy for one of these people? And let them go out and visit. They love that kind of thing. They love the social interaction, and it means a lot to the people that they visit. Use social affiliation motivators for those people that have a high need for social interaction. Fourth motivator, affection. Now, be careful with this, particularly to the men out there listening to this tape. There is a proper way to show affection, and make sure, again, it is appropriate. Underline appropriate. One of the things I've learned from a mentor of mine, Don Sheehan, who wrote the great book, Shut Up and Sell, said there's three times you need to touch a client or prospect in order to make a sale. And that is, as you shake hands, you touch palm to palm, and then reach out with your opposite hand and touch the back of their hand just lightly. And then when you direct them to where you want to sit down or that you want them to move into your office, just touch them lightly on the back of the elbow. Now, those three touches are so either common because of the handshake or so subtle because of the light touch, they don't even notice it. But they will more than likely buy from you. You have a 45% greater chance of having somebody buy from you, according to studies on skinectics, that's touching with the skin, if you touch them than if you don't. Also, using neuro-linguistic programming techniques, when you touch, there's a right way and a wrong way. As you shake hands and touch the back of their hand, when you go to touch their hand, pull towards you. And when you release, pull towards you. In doing it this way, you find it's non-threatening to that individual. If, on the other hand, you ever touch someone and you go towards the person, you go towards their body, you find that's very threatening and very uncomfortable. So you can show affection, just make sure it's the right people and it's done the right way. Fifth motivator here is prestige. Prestige is a real powerful motivator for many individuals, and a smart leader would take advantage of that. First of all, you may want to consider them as being special in the office. Give them a special desk. If they've earned the privilege, they've been there around for a while, give them a feeling of prestige by giving them a bigger desk, a fancier desk, maybe putting a credenza behind them. Think about what would make this person feel special and rise above their peers somehow as being a unique individual. If they have a high need for prestige, you need to feed that in order to keep them productive or to make them even more productive. When you have workers in a factory, before you give new tools to new workers, give the older workers, those that have a high need for prestige particularly, the option. Do you want the new tools or do you want to keep your old standbys? If you tell them automatically you're going to take the new tools, they may resent it. If you don't give them the option, they may say, why do the new guys get the new tools? Give them the option. That gives them a feeling like, hey, they're special. You talk to them. You ask them as opposed to making an arbitrary decision. Maybe giving people in an office a window could be a great way of giving them prestige, or maybe a little more size. It's amazing how many times you go by an office building at night and you see the lights on in an office and there's some manager down on his or her hands and knees and they're measuring out who's got more square feet or more square meters to see who's got the most prestige. It may not mean a thing to you, but to some people who have a high need for prestige, means a lot. Titles are another excellent way of giving people prestige. I worked in an advertising agency as an account executive, which, by the way, was a fancy title for salesmen. And I found they didn't have someone in the mailroom. They had a traffic manager. You find that any time you give someone a title that makes them feel better, they can use it in public. And that's typically where it really gives them that feeling of prestige. Yeah, well, they go into the bar and they try to meet someone, and it's, well, I'm a traffic manager. I'm an account executive. I'm a senior project manager. And it just makes them feel special. It elevates them in their own mind and helps improve that self-image concept we talked about earlier, how we compare ourselves to other people.